What's up, knife freaks, sharpness geeks, and purveyors of stabby goodness? Welcome to the Knife Freak Show. My name is Jonathan McNeese. This is my co-host, Mr. Chase Boatwright.
Good morning, Juarez family. I am here.
All right. Bringing the energy today. I like it.
Yeah.
All right.
So, how have you been doing this week?
We've had a pretty good week this week. So, a little bit of shakeups and changes. Nothing really to go over, I don't guess, on air at the moment, but maybe I will talk about it later, but I didn't think to tell you about it before we went on air. But anyway, nothing bad. So everything just kind of, just some changes. So
yeah.
Yeah, it's all good.
There's always, yeah. It's everything about this is a dynamic process. It's, you know,
very much so.
Yeah. So.
Very much so, but we're on track pretty good. I can tell you real quick what we've been dealing with since Blade Show. We got Blade, more Dixon blades out. So we're still like trying to get in a rhythm of building the Dixons, and by getting in a rhythm, I mean like getting parts flowing so that we're in a regular schedule with parts coming from the water jet.
Yep,
you know, coming to us, going out to heat treat, coming back, and we just haven't done them long enough yet to get in a full cycle. Cause at first you can't just push everything through, because then if something's wrong, then if you're already, you know, three batches deep stacked up coming down the line and something's wrong, then you've already messed up way more parts or whatever. So in the beginning, it takes a little bit to get everything flowing, and every step depends on the step before it. So it's like, all right, we got to get this going first, and then after that, then we'll get caught up on heat treat, then we'll get caught up. So anyway,
I heard that process sort of described like, you know, starting up an old car, you know, they kind of have that, you know, they're not quite warmed up, and then, you know, then they get going, and that's, you know, very much like when you start a new product.
Yeah, I feel like an old car right now, so that's probably... But yeah, we're basically waiting on blade. The short story is we're waiting on blades for Dixons to come back from heat treat. We've used up all the Dixon blades that we had ready to use. So we've got a couple of collab projects going on some Mac 2s that we're working on right now. We did just do a Dixon drop yesterday, but that was the last of the blades that we have. But just got a notification from Peters yesterday, and we'll have more blades within a couple of days, probably Tuesday or so of next week. So.
Sweet.
So we'll be able to, and at that point, hopefully we're going to be able to keep the ball rolling and send off a week's worth of blades. And then once we've done that, it's about a 2-week turnaround typically, but that's part of what I was talking about. We got blades to them as quick as we could, but Blade Show more than doubled the turnaround time, which I knew it was going to back them up some. I didn't realize it'd be quite that much. So we went from like a 2-week turnaround to like a 5-week turnaround. So otherwise we'd have already had Dixon blades back and ready. So anyway, just one of those things, but
they were trying to get everybody in last minute and you know,
I was one of those. I had some pretty close before Blade Show that I needed done in a hurry too. So like, I can't complain because they hooked me up on that too. So it's just, next year I'll know more. This is our first year of having stuff, sending stuff to them, you know, at this regular of a interval like that. So next year I'll kind of know what to expect a little more and be able to plan a little better. So it's fine. But anyway, so that's kind of what we've had going on in the shop. What about you?
I've been cleansing my palate with some fixed blades. I've been working on fixed blades all week and enjoying it.
Cool.
I needed a break from folders for a little while after working on them for so long, because after I got back from Blade Show, I was finishing up a couple that didn't quite make it to Blade Show, or, you know, still working on those here and there. And I've got one more show for the year. It's like a small little show in Birmingham at Mark's Outdoors, if anybody's happens to be local.
That's coming up. When is that? That's
July 17th, 19th.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they moved it back a little bit this year, so it's not used to. It used to be like the first week of July, and that was real close after Blade. But
it would always follow the week that we were typically going on a trip too. So
I've got that show, so I'm making some fixed blades for that. I'm going to have some folders down there too. But
very good.
Definitely enjoying getting back to some fixed blades and just, you know, enjoying the simplicity of it for a little while, because that's definitely where I find enjoyment.
Yeah, there's still plenty of things you can screw up and headaches and stuff, but definitely not the same as folders. Like you don't have to deal with all the moving parts and all the stuff. There's just a whole lot more details in a folder. So
yeah, one of them I had started doing a compound grind on, and after I had posted on Instagram having this compound grind, I went back to touch something up, or maybe I had posted it at like 120 grit and I was going up to 400 and ended up messing it up at a later grit. So I just had to grind through the compound and make it one single hollow. And so, you know, it's not exactly what I had planned, but it's still going to be a perfectly functional knife, and I'll, you know,
right.
It's just, you know,
yeah. One of those things. If you hadn't already shown it or told everybody on the podcast, nobody'd ever know the difference. It's just what you had planned. Yeah.
I posted it and then I went up and ate lunch and then came back right after lunch and messed it up. So like it was like that for about an hour. But that's how it goes.
Yeah.
as soon as you put it out in the world.
Yeah, that can almost be like a jinx there sometimes. So
yeah, I mean, it's just one of those things. Especially with those compound grinds, you start trying to chase like the transitions and stuff like that, because it was like it's sort of a Persian-y blade shape, and I was going to do like a sort of tanto grind out at the tip and flat grind it out there, and trying to make those transitions line up and be crisp and all those things, and just pushed it a little too far and belt skipped, and they went all my grind lines.
It is easy to do.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
especially freehanding. But yeah, it's
for sure.
One more thing that I want to mention before I forget: the Knife Freak Show shirts that I took to Blade Show are live on my website, boatwrightbladeworks.bigcartel.com. Sorry. And just go to merch, and they're on there. There's larges, extra larges, and 2Xs right now. If you want a different size, send me an email or message or whatever, and I can get that made for you. So,
yeah, and go check them out, guys. They came out really cool, especially if you're an old time WWE fan. Then you're probably gonna like them. They came out really cool. I like mine. I wore it last week, and I didn't even look to see what brand the shirt was, but I really liked the way it fit. So.
I believe it's called District.
I like the way it fits. So
yeah,
cool. I've
been kind of enjoying that sort of looser, I don't know, fit here lately, as opposed to some of those poly blend ones that kind of show my flabby bits. But
yeah, they can be a blessing and a curse.
Yeah,
depending on what kind of shape you're in.
Yeah.
So. Speaking of blessings, I think you had a pretty nice little surprise little win this past week, didn't you?
I did. Zap Tooling Alloys, which is a steel manufacturer, was doing a giveaway on their Instagram page for a Miller Brothers M8 Compact, and I just so happened to win.
Nice.
Entered in the giveaway, which is rare that I do that sort of thing. But I decided, sure, what the heck. And I think I was one of the first few, and I was just kind of getting the ball rolling and, you know, tagging a few people, hoping they would tag a few. And off it went, and I happened to win somehow. And
nice.
It's in Z-Wear Steel, which is, I think it's their sort of proprietary, or not proprietary, their version of Crewwear. Essentially, trying to get the camera to capture the finish. I didn't actually show Jonathan beforehand, but it's got this really cool, like, acid distressed finish, and got some gray and black milled G10 handles. And this thing's a beast. It comes with a really nice Kydex sheath setup, has all these leather bits on it as well. It's got a leather belt loop, little leather loop for a fire steel that's included. It's got a whole bunch of bells and whistles, and it's very nice. I really like their sheath setup as well as the knife. I've just been walking around the house holding the knife, and my wife keeps making fun of me, but I don't really care, because, you know, that's what I do anyway.
Just enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, I get a new knife and I'll walk around with it for a few days, just kind of holding it and touching it, and I'll put it back in the sheath for a minute, and then I'm like, I want to feel it again, you know. So yeah, very cool.
That's
new
cool
camp knife for my collection.
Yeah, that's very cool. They make some really cool stuff. I've always liked the looks of their stuff, and the sheaths honestly are part of what kind of has always caught my eye on their stuff, because they always do some really nice looking sheaths that are not, you know, they're more than basic for sure. So I've always liked the looks of their stuff. I've never actually handled one, but so maybe I'll get a chance to check yours out in person at some point. It's definitely some cool looking work.
Yeah. I mean, I know a lot of the stuff they make are basically swords, you know, machete to sword size. Like they make some big gnarly looking stuff. And so like, I feel like this is a, you know, baby knife for them, but it's really reasonable size. I'd probably say it's 5-inch blade, you know, good, just sort of field utility, you know, camp knife, I would say, size.
Right.
And one of the things I wanted to kind of bring up is, you know, like I said, this is field utility, you know, it's thick on the spine. It's got a flat grind down at the edge, down all the way to the edge. And it's a hard use intended knife is basically the intent behind it. Of it's very robust.
Yeah.
And I did want to say thank you to Miller Brothers and Zap Tooling Alloys as well for running the giveaway, because that was very cool. But that kind of leads me into, we're going to do a question first, and then that's going to lead us into our main topic for today. So this question comes from Mr. John Bidwell. And he says, is there a way as a collector and harder use knife guy for me to know if a knife edge is going to hold up before I cut into a harder material because I bang on all of them? And this is verbatim. So, and part two of the question, and if I run into an edge that may do this, is there a way to recognize and fix it myself before damaging the edge and needing you guys to fix it? So, did you get all that?
Yeah. It's a little bit involved, but
yeah,
I got it. So, right. You want to lead off with it or you want me to?
Either way.
So, all right, I'll jump in first. And so what I would say, because I know why, because I know exactly where this question came from, because Mr. Bidwell is, which thanks you for the question, John. And also thank you for the other thing you did for us this past week. I greatly appreciate it. You'll know what I'm talking about. That was really cool. So he got a tanto of ours that I had taken a batch of them, like really thin at the edge, and it ended up having a little bit of trouble, and I had to get it back and resharpen it and kind of reprofile it a little bit. Cause I took them. I'm kind of notorious for a lot of times when I really, if I'm given a little leeway, I'm really bad about pushing the blades as thin as we can possibly go with them.
Yep.
And that's, and when I say a little leeway, I've had to rein myself in some on that, knowing that we're making production knives now that are, you know, you kind of have to aim a little more down the center of the road, I feel like, with a production knife, because it can't be too specialized as far as the edge. You know what I'm saying? Like, it can't be like just for super fine cutting or whatever. It also doesn't need to be super robust. Now, when I say a production knife, let me clarify, like folders, like what we're making, you know, and some fixed blades too. So what I'm getting at with all that is that a lot of it is not all knife edges are made the same. Not all knife edges need to be made the same. So a lot of it depends on the intended use of the knife. Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you could even have two different, and we have had like different blades or different grinds on the same blades and different knives that are, some are just pushed thinner than others that are going to be more, there's always going to be a trade-off with every single thing that you do of making something, in this case knives, there, every single thing basically comes with a trade-off, right? And so you have to figure out which side of the line that you want to land on, you know, how far to push it and that kind of stuff. So obviously, typically, the more robust an edge is, the more it can hold up to heavier use. it's, they can still get really sharp, but typically they do not stay sharp as long, right? Mm-hmm. Because just, it's a more obtuse angle, just by the nature of physics or whatever, they just don't, they're just not going to stay sharp as long typically.
Yeah.
Now we'll talk about other, there's other factors for sure. Steel, the steel composition, the heat treat, both are huge factors in this too, but just setting that aside for the minute. So if the knife is dependent, is designed and kind of intended to be more of like a slicey grind, then you're going to, it's going to slice like crazy. It's going to stay sharp longer. You're going to be able to put an edge back on it quicker, but it's not going to hold up for as heavy a use. The inverse is true. If it's a more robust, you know, wider angle, obtuse angle, sharpening edge, sharpened edge, then it's going to be more robust. It's not going to be as likely to chip, roll, or anything like that, but it probably is going to dull quicker, and it's probably not going to be quite as slicey as a, you know, a more acute angle sharpening grind. So that all kind of track with what you...
Yeah, and the, I think another reason for this question from John is he also got a knife from me. He got one of my, it's this knife here that I'm showing the people now. It's one of my Moraine S's, so a little 5-inch overall, 2-inch blade, fixed blade. And the edge was very, very thin, and he ended up having some issues with it. And I got it back after he had returned it and all that, and have done some modifications since then. But, yeah. So that was sort of, you know, I guess.
Yeah. I'll take all the blame for it. You probably learned that bad habit from me. And yeah, I call it a bad habit. It's not necessarily technically a bad habit. Just like I said, it kind of depends on whether what you intended the knife for, but then on us, I guess we need to do a better job of relating to the customer what, yeah, kind of what that specific grind or whatever is inclined to be best at, and
yeah,
you know, what you can expect from it. So one thing I could tell you as far as how to know, John and everybody else out there, one of the best indicators you can look at typically is how wide of a sharpening bevel the knife has on it. Because typically, just by the nature of how it works, if you have a really thin edge before you sharpen it, so it comes down to, you know, really thin, like we push ours all the way down. I typically try to stay around 10 thousandths. That one that I'm talking about on John's, it was definitely below 10 thousandths, which admittedly was risky, but but I so like them to be super slicey so often. I'd make everything zero grinds almost if I could all the time. But, so anyway, if it's already really thin, like if it's almost sharp before you ever even go back and put the sharpening bevel on it, then when you go to sharpen it, it's going to pop that wire edge. And when we sharpen them, guys, what we're looking at, those of you that are familiar with sharpening and stuff already know, but what you're trying to do is take the material down to so thin that it creates a wire edge. So it's just this little flakes of material all the way down the edge of the knife. And once you've got a wire edge down the whole thing, then it's basically ready to strop off, and it removes the little loose wire edge that kind of just like you'll, as you're sharpening, it pushes the, once the wire edge is popped up and you flip it over and you do the other side, it just kind of pushes the wire edge back the other way. And you can go on like that forever if you want to just continue to remove material off of your knife. But basically, once you've created a wire edge down the entire length of the blade, it's ready to strop. You strop that wire edge off of it. And then, you know, depending on what, now I'm talking about getting to that wire edge, like the final grit of whatever you're going to take it to. And then, you know, you can, when I say strop it, what we do is take the wire edge, strop it, knock that wire edge off. It polishes it a little bit, but we're not going for like a super high polished edge. You can go back and work it up through, you know, higher grit polishes and stuff like that as well. But just talking about kind of how we do it, basically it gets, you know, whatever it is off of the grinding machine, you know, say 10 thou, but 10 thou, it's not going to have a, it's going to have kind of an average size sharpening bevel. It's not going to be real tall. It is also not going to be like just barely a bevel at all. If you take it down below 10 thou, you're going to see, you know, like the sharpening bevel will be very short. It won't go up the blade very far. And typically the farther up the blade the sharpening bevel goes, that means the blade, the edge was left thicker before they put the sharpening bevel on there, because just by the nature of how it works, to get it to come down to a complete wire edge, the thicker it is, the higher it takes to grind. That's just the way it works. Yep. So looking at it is one way to tell them, okay, is this a really tall sharpening bevel? If it is, I mean, there are exceptions. You could technically put a taller sharpening bevel on it, you know, if you wanted to go with a really, really acute angle, you know, if you sharpened it like 8 degrees or something on an already thin knife, then yes, you could push the sharpening edge. But most people sharpen, you know, kind of in that somewhere around the 20 degree range, I feel like.
Yeah.
At least on a
production, like factory maker level, I don't think most makers go to that, like, you know, 13 degrees or anything. That's, you know, more of a secondary modification. So,
yeah, it's not totally cut and dried, because people do all kinds of different sharpening methods. But as a general rule, if it has the shorter the sharpening bevel, the thinner the edge is going to be, the slicier it's going to be, and the taller the sharpening bevel, the more obtuse the angle is, and the more robust it's going to be, and it's probably not going to be quite as slicey, probably not going to hold up and keep your edge quite as long, just because it's a more obtuse angle to begin with.
Yep. So, and that was going to be my point one as well. We didn't really, bounce these ideas back and forth off each other first, but that was going to be my first point of how to recognize. And my second point would be, look at what type of grind it has. Common grinds being flat grind, hollow grind, and some cases convex. Convex is going to be very robust. That would be like your Bark Rivers, your Falknevens, and stuff like that. And there's some custom makers that do that, and a few other people that do it, but that one's the one that's a little less common. But as far as most people, a hollow grind is generally going to be more slicey, less robust than a flat grind, which will be, and there's, you know, like Jonathan said, there's, you know, different things for every situation. This is, you know, blanket statements don't work, but in general, flat grinds will leave more holding material behind the edge than a hollow grind, which is meant to get really, really thin, you know, and be more slicey. So I would say look at what type of grinds on the knives you're buying, and that will help as well. And also blade stock thickness. Because this Moraine is somewhere under an eighth of an inch. It's 1/12, I think, is something like that, versus this M8 Compact is somewhere over a quarter inch. And so it's just depending on your uses, depending on the use case and what you plan to do with it, you know, buy accordingly in that particular scenario. If you want something more robust that you can beat on, that you can not have to worry about, you know, I would buy something with a thicker spine and look for the flat grind, look for the higher edge bevel.
Yeah. And another thing, jumping off what you said about the blade thickness and stuff, the stock thickness. Yeah. So the blade grind height. So not the sharpening bevel, but the height of the grind makes a difference too. Yeah. So especially on a flat grind, because if you take a piece of material, you take a knife that has a 1-inch tall blade and it's flat ground, then you have 1 inch to go from full. When I say a flat grind, we're talking a full flat grind. So it starts off at full thickness of the spine and comes down to say, let's call it 10/1000ths at the edge. All right. Let's say that that's what we're shooting for at the edge before we put the sharpening bevel on it. Because like I said, that's kind of actually a little on the thin side for a lot of production knives, but it's, you know, a very workable, usable edge. So if you're going from 1 inch from full thickness, and say it's a quarter inch thick stock, and you go all the way down to edge, well, that's a whole lot different angle than a blade that's 2 inches or 3 inches, like say a big chopper or something like that, one that you got, you know, it's 2 or 3 inches tall, and you have a flat grind angling down from all the way up here all the way down to the edge. Well, that's going to be a more acute angle than the short grind that that comes down the edge. You have more distance to create the angle. And so you're going to come out, you know, you could have a big, like 3-inch wide blade, you know, something like, you know, a big chopper or something, and have a really good flat grind on it and take it down to 10 thou at the edge. And it's going to cut way different than a 1-inch thick knife, like a Japanese style tanto or something or whatever, just a straight kind of, you know, thin edge, but made out of the same thickness material. If they're both made out of 1/4-inch stock, well, the much taller blade is going to be much slicier than the other one. If they're both made out of the same stock and taken to the same thickness at the edge, mm-hmm. you know, then the shorter one is going to be a way more obtuse angle and not going to be nearly as slicey. So
yeah,
that's another factor that factors in is the height of the grind.
Yeah.
And while we're on the subject of the heights of grinds, I wanted to, it's kind of off topic a little bit, but it does relate to grind heights, because I've had a couple of people, like on our Dixons, say that they wish the grind was pushed higher or whatever. I actually had somebody say they wish it was pushed higher and deeper, which for one thing, they got a pretty deep hollow grind on them, actually. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, short of doing like a, well, let me get into the explanation and I'll explain why. So with a hollow grind, guys, it's different than a flat grind. Okay. With a hollow grind, it's done with a wheel of some sort, right? And the radius of the wheel essentially determines how deep it's going to go and how high the top grind line is going to push. All right. There's some nuance there. There's some blending and feathering that you can do when you do them by hand that you can, you know, so it's not necessarily a true exact radius of the wheel that's being ground into the knife. So like in theory, if you think about it, you take a piece of metal and you grind it across a wheel that's a 10-inch radius wheel, you're going to get a grind that goes a certain depth and a certain height. If you take a 3-inch radius wheel and you grind the exact same distance in, mm-hmm. then that grind is going to go much deeper and not nearly as tall.
Yes.
Does that make sense? Like, and anybody that's ever done any hand grinding on wheels, on, you know, hollow grinding, understands that. If you want a really deep, like really deep channel hollow grind, you use a really small wheel, like a 3-inch or something like that. But you're only going to be able to push the grind line just so high, at least without manipulating and kind of, like I said, feathering it in and doing some blending where it's not actually a true exact radius, right? You're kind of, you're pushing it up and you're kind of blending it up at the top. So it still can look good. But as a general rule, the smaller the wheel, the deeper the grind, the shorter the grind. The bigger the wheel, the taller the grind, but the shallower the grind. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I know it does to you, because you, like I said, anybody that's ever ground a hollow grind on, you know, on more than one size wheel understands the concept. So
yeah, I mean, didn't you used to,
make it? Go ahead.
Sorry, didn't you used to grind the Killer Bees on like a 3-inch wheel or something like that?
Yeah,
and like get them that like, and really deep into there.
Yeah,
but the grind didn't go that high because it was just, you know, deep.
Because that's the radius of the wheel. The radius of the wheel determines it. Like you,
You know, I mean, if you have,
you can literally grind all the way through the center of the knife. Yeah. You could take a 3-inch wheel, literally grind from both sides until your grinds meet in the middle and it has a, you know, essentially a hole in the middle of your knife where the deepest part of the wheels were coming together, and the grind would still only be just so high.
Yeah.
Right. It's not going to just keep pushing up as you go deeper. It's going to push up to a certain amount and then it's going to max out because of the radius of the wheel.
Oh, yeah.
So to simply say, make it deeper and higher, actually those two things are in exact, that's the compromise, some of that compromise and trade-off I was talking about earlier. Those are two completely polar things. Like to make it, you grind it with a taller grind, then it naturally is going to get less deep, shallower. Yeah. If you grind it deeper, it's naturally going to be not as tall of a grind. All right. So that does kind of go back some to the original topic or whatever, but I know there's some confusion out there about that, because it's not just, there's not just this magic switch that you can put in, just, okay, it's going to go deep, but also high. Like I said, without grinding them by hand and doing some blending and manipulation at the top of the grind and the bottom of the grind,
mm-hmm.
because when you push it against a a radius, a wheel, you know, a round wheel, when you're grinding against that, it's going to cut a groove in it. And it's going to cut a groove that matches the radius of that wheel. Right. So unless you manipulate it and twist it towards the edge or towards the spine a little bit as you're doing it, then it is going to 100% determine the height and the depth of the grind. And then how deep you keep grinding it, you know, that also determines your edge thickness, right? Mm-hmm. So if you say you're not doing a lot of manipulating, you're trying to do just a straight, you know, as true to the radius of the wheel as you can get.
Yeah.
Well, there's a certain point where it's going to get to the correct thickness that you wanted at the edge, and where the top of the grind line is where the top of the grind line is. Like, you don't have any control over
it. It's like our, you know, the duplex grinds that I do and that you used to do on a lot of, I mainly saw them on sky bolts and stuff. Like, mm-hmm. doing a smaller hollow and then a bigger hollow. And it,
yeah.
that's not just, you know, grinding more into it using the same wheel. That those grind heights were established, you know, in my case, I use a 6-inch wheel for the small portion close to the handle, and then a 12-inch wheel out towards the end. And
yeah.
that's the difference in the grind heights that you see for those particular things.
Right. It's, again, determined by the wheel that you're using. So yeah. it's, you know, again, there's, with hand grinding, there is some manipulation that you can do to, if you know what you're doing, you can definitely, you know, take a deep grind and you can push it up a little bit and vice versa. But it's very much, for the most part, determined by the radius of the wheel. So just be able to say, you know, oh, just make it deeper and taller. Well, that's, you know, you can't just magically snap your fingers and make it deeper and taller. You kind of have to choose one or the other, basically. And you can only go so deep. Once you've chosen the radius that you're using, you can still only go so deep before to get the edge. Say we're trying to shoot for that 10,000th edge. When you get it to that 10, when the edge gets to the point where it's at 10,000th, the material above it on a hollow grind is actually thinner than that.
Yeah.
Just a little bit. All right. So, or it's definitely not much thicker. It kind of depends. Yeah. I've heard arguments that it kind of depends on where you create your groove in relation to the edge as well.
Yeah.
Either way, let's just say it's as thin or right in there up, you know, above the sharpening bevel than it is at the actual edge. So like, you can't just continue to make it deeper without essentially grinding through the thing or, you know.
Yep. You know, done
so,
that.
Right. So, I mean, the thickness of edge you're going for kind of determines how deep the grind is. That in combination with the radius of the wheel you're using is what determines how deep the grind is in relation to how thick your edge is.
Yep.
I think I probably made that confusing, but.
No, I mean, well, it made sense to me, but then again, I know, you know.
Yeah. I've had these battles. Like I said, and if you got any, like, guys, just imagine, like, again, you've got a wheel that's got an abrasive belt on it, right? So, You're essentially just, you know, you're grinding a groove into that piece of metal. So when you're grinding that groove in, it's, you know, you're grinding it with that wheel. It's the groove you're grinding is going to match that wheel. You can continue to push it deeper and deeper. And that the deeper you push it, the farther it's going to move both directions. So it's going to get farther towards the edge and it's going to get farther towards the spine. But you reach a point where it maxes out because you're going to reach a point where the edge is getting the thickness it needs to be. And once the edge is at the thickness it needs to be, it's already grown the other direction towards the spine to wherever it's going to go, and where it is where it is.
Yep.
Like, again, without some manipulation there. Yep. So just understand that too, when you're looking at grinds and stuff, that like, it's great to wish that, you know, hey, I'd like to see this taller and deeper. Well, that's not always doable. Like you can't necessarily have your cake and eat it too on that. It's, you know, it's determined by actual physical factors that we can't necessarily change, again, short of hand grinding everything and doing a lot of manipulation and stuff with the blending and feathering.
Yeah. So like on a lot of my drawings, my hand drawings, I don't really draw bevel lines anymore because I used to, you know, be like, oh, I want it right here. And then I would start chasing it, you know, once I got to start making it, but I kind of just, I'm like, oh, okay, that's where it lands. I'll take a measurement and roughly, you know, put that back in my drawing. But, you know, otherwise it lands where it lands. I grind most stuff on a 12-inch wheel and you know, that's,
yeah, in theory you should be able to kind of plan it out if you, yeah, you know, it's doable to kind of math it out and,
yeah,
and figure out with that radius wheel where it's going to put you or whatever, but it's probably not going to be dead on exact. At least I can't math it that good.
Yeah.
So,
there's a formula, yeah, on the internet. There used to be like a hollow grind calculator out there, but last I checked, the, yeah, site was down, unfortunately.
Right. But again, like I said, that's also kind of determines on whether you're doing a straight in, just, you know, what I'm talking about manipulating and feathering it, guys, when you're hand grinding. So imagine you have a blade.
I'm kind of pushing
against chilling the wheel. You're bringing it across. Okay. You're bringing it across. Well, you can try to create the angle, the way you twist the knife. So the edge, most of us grind edge up. So the angle, whether you twist the edge towards the wheel more or twist the spine towards the wheel more, will determine whether or not you're just grinding a true straight groove into it, or whether or not you're kind of feathering it towards the edge or towards the spine. So that's when I'm talking about having some control over that. You can do that, but
it's all in the motorcycle motion, or the
yeah, it key, is it's
the, twisting, you know, a key, basically, is how I've heard it described. That's how, yep, you change, you know, if your edge is not thin enough yet, you know, twist the key into the wheel, and if it's, you know, you're, yep, trying to raise the grind line, you twist away. And
right, you push the, I mean, you can kind of look at it and see which way, you know, the material you need to remove needs to be twisted into the wheel more. So whichever way you know, if you need the edge thinner, you twist the edge into the wheel more. If you need it thinner at the top of the grind line, you twist the spine towards the wheel. And it, and so you, again, you have some, that's one of the great things about freehand grinding. That's another thing you'll see, like, did you see these guys that grind with jigs and fixtures and stuff? That's one reason that they are so consistent in the heights of their grinds and stuff. And some of them may do a combination to do it, but people are just straight up jig grinding, like the jig, the fixture is laid on the work rest, and it's just grinding across there. Where they don't have that twisting manipulation that we were just talking about. So it's literally what I was saying, as you're pushing that straight into the thing and you're bringing it across, that fixture and that jig is holding it from twisting at all. So it's holding it perfectly straight against the wheel, and you're getting just that groove cut in there, and deeper and deeper and deeper. And once that groove gets to the point where on both sides of the blade, where the edge is at the thickness that you need it to be at, well, then again, the top grind line is going to be where it's going to be, because, yeah, it's determined by the radius of the wheel. And, you know, once you, so anyway, that's the little confusing lesson on grinding, but it, yeah, does affect the edge stuff for sure.
I wish you could have seen me throughout this whole thing. I've been pulling out all sorts of props left, right, and sideways.
Well, hopefully it helped, because I feel like I, yeah, was a little confusing with all that. So we might have to do a. We might,
I got
do
a
like
cake a, cup and a candle lid involved. Like,
oh Lord,
things we might have to do.
Had I thought this all through ahead of time, I would have set a whiteboard up and we, yeah, could have actually kind of drawn it out. But maybe we'll do a little grinding video or something soon and post it on here as kind of like a follow-up kind of thing.
And that'd be a cool thing difference. If I like came to the shop and we did that together, and I
that
could
would be
grind
cool.
And you could talk and tell people what I'm doing wrong.
But yeah. And we could do what I'd like, really like to do is grind something like show two pretty big extremes, like grind one. Like we could take one with my big, like 14 inch wheel and, yeah, and grind it with that. And then take a 3-inch wheel and grind one with that. And you guys will quickly see what we're talking about of how it's, you know, and if we grind it down to the, you know, the edge to the same thickness, the grind lines are going to be completely different heights. Like, and the depth of the deepest part of the hollows will be very significantly different as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the heights of the grind, all that affects it. And also just another little side lesson there that you can't just magically wish for deeper and hollower at the same time, because it doesn't necessarily work that way without completely changing the blade. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like go into a much taller blade so that you have room to put the grind in there without, you know, running out of room or whatever. So
yep.
Anyway.
All right. So on to John's second part of his question, he said, if I run into an edge that may do this, is there a way to recognize and fix it before damaging the edge and needing you guys to fix it. And on that one, I've been thinking about this for a few days, and I'm, you know, trying to, best answer I could come up with is, I mean, assuming the actual, it's just damage to the edge and not the material behind the edge. In the case of the one he had sent back to me, like the actual behind the edge had flexed after he had cut into some hard material. And so, I mean, it was way, way thin down there for it to do that. Like, yeah. I said, probably too thin. And that, I feel like, I don't know if there's anything you could do there beyond just removing a ton of material, you know, via sharpening or whatever your methods would be. The other thing you could do is to put a more, I guess if an edge is too thin and not, I guess, not necessarily the material behind the edge, but if an edge is too sort of laid back, as we would call it, too acute, would be to change that angle into a more obtuse angle, and that would kind of bolster that edge a little bit. But what do you think?
Yeah, in either case, like, there's no way around it that the only way to do anything about it is to remove material.
Yeah.
Because whether you make the angle more obtuse or whatever, you're going to be removing material. And, of course, it all depends, too, whether it's a flat or a hollow grind. I know in the case of both the ones that we're talking about, they're hollow grinds, so which is where I would guess you would run into more of that issue with. So I would say to try to recognize it before it becomes a problem would be to try to kind of recognize the signs that we talked about up to this point of, like, just by observing, okay, does this thing look really thin at the edge? Does it have a really short sharpening bevel? You know, can I, like, run my fingers over the, not on the edge, on the middle of the hollow grind and tell that it's a very deep hollow grind? So I know it's probably getting pretty thin at the edge. And if it's a knife that's obviously built as more of a slicer, then honestly, that some of that just comes into play of using the right tool for the right job. So if you've got a knife that, you know, because not every knife is necessarily ideal for every job, you know, so there's a lot of stuff you can do, you know, you can push them, you know, and do a lot of stuff that maybe they're not technically designed to do, but ideally not every tool is designed for every job. And that's the same true with every tool out there, not just knives, to include guns, to include, you know, wrenches, to include everything, hammers, you know, what.
I mean, a Phillips head ain't going to work on a Torx bit, you know.
No, and a 20 ounce generic hammer is not going to work for forging out big billets of stuff, you know, for a blacksmith. You know, I mean, it's just different tools have different uses. So, trying to recognize, like we talked about up till now, what kind of edge that the knife actually has on it, and then maybe you can just basically prevent the problem by keeping that in mind with what you're using the knife for. I know for what he's doing, he's talking about just, you know, having a general purpose. So it may just mean that, you know, if you've got a knife that's a thinner edge, you might not carry it the day where you're thinking you're going to be using, you know, more robust tasks and stuff, needing it for stuff like that. And may just, you know, again, you know, you're not going to necessarily pull out the, you know, Barrett 50 cal to get rid of a, you know,
squirrel
in your backyard, right? Yeah. You know, yeah, you choose the right tool for the job. So I was trying to think of what I could kill off there without, you know, hurting anybody's feelings too bad.
I mean, we probably got squirrel people after us now. It's fine.
Yeah, that's fine. No squirrels were harmed in the making of this podcast. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's one thing. And then if something like that does happen, then basically the only option at that point is to remove material. And either you can just, if it's not real bad, like Chase said, you can sharpen it out. Mm-hmm. You can change the angle some if you want to, but either way, you're going to be removing some material. And as you remove material, the thickness at the edge is going to thicken up a little bit. And sometimes it doesn't take a lot. Like the difference between, you know, it being, you know, say at 5 or 6 thou at the edge before you put the sharpening bevel on it, And getting it up there to where it's back to 10 or more, like that's almost probably not even a perceptible amount of material if you laid them side by side, you know, yeah. two blades, you know, if you started out and then you removed a little bit of, you know, resharpened it enough that the edge thickened up a little bit, you're probably not going to be able to look at them side by side and tell if it's, I mean, if it's drastic, then sure, you'll, you know.
Oh, yeah. I've taken them where, like, you know, I had to, you know, I screwed them up so bad where I had to, you know, grind half the blade back and it was just as thin as the, you know, yeah. edge was. And, you know,
right.
obviously those didn't make it anywhere. They're still floating around in my right. shop somewhere.
Those really but deep yeah. hollow grinds.
This yeah. one that John sent in, that's exactly what I did. I just basically ground the edge back off and put a new edge back on it, and it's seems to be good. It's not, I'm not selling it because it has had issues, but you know, it'll probably right. go to a family member or something.
So yeah, basically the only way that really you can, you know, once it becomes a problem and it's got an issue at the edge, pretty much looking at removing material in one form or the other. So, and if it's too bad, then that's just a you know, customer service issue that you would need to deal with. So,
yep.
Yeah, that's kind of the wrap up on that, I would say.
Yep. So beyond grinds and edge thicknesses and all that, there are, you know, beyond the geometry is basically what we've been talking about this whole time. The other right. sort of aspects to performance, you know, the three-legged stool that is talked about are the steel that it is composed of and the heat treat. And those are very important as well. I would say steel being the least important of the ones, and heat treat yeah. and geometry being more important.
Agreed.
Okay. I assumed you would, but yeah, I couldn't hear yeah. you for a second. But yeah.
yeah.
So like the heat treat being, and you know, when people think heat treat these days, it seems like people just want the highest HRC possible and nothing else. And that's not exactly how heat treating or heat treatment works. I at least go for a balance in properties as far as toughness, edge retention, and stainlessness can be affected by heat treatment as well.
Yep.
Especially, I know there's some steels where you can heat temper them in a lower range and, you know, get more of the stain resistance properties and, you know, sort of balanced edge retention, but you can heat, temper them at a really high range. Like I think 20 CV is like this, where you can temper it down in the 300 to 400 range. And, but you can also temper it at 1,000. But when you start tempering at 1,000, you start messing with the stain resistance, but you can pull more edge retention out of it. But anyway, I don't know where I was going with that thought, but, I just heat treat plays a big factor in it as well. And just because, you know, there's two things an edge can do when reaching a immovable object, as it were, or, you know, whenever it reaches something that, you know, gets it to its point, it can either break or it can bend. And in my opinion, I would say bending is always more preferable than breaking. You would rather the edge roll than it would chip, in my opinion. Yeah. Are you on the same path there?
Yeah. Yeah, I would. Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah. I would rather that material still be there than that material to be gone and, you know, actually chip out and lose something. You know, there's more right. chippy steels like S30V had, you know, real bad chippiness issues way back when it was released. They seem to have got that resolved in the years since, and I don't know why that was the first one that jumped into my mind, but, you know, other steels, you would have to try real hard to chip a 3V knife, I think, or break a 3V yeah. knife or crew wear or Z wear.
Yeah.
But, you know, those sort of things definitely play a factor in, along with the steel composition.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And, it goes back to what I said in the very beginning, that everything is a compromise. Like yeah. there is no, and what the perfect combination and the perfect recipe for heat treat of a, for the steel choice and the heat treat of said steel, that recipe of all that together, there's not any one solution that's like the best one for everybody.
Nope.
You know, it's kind of because it depends on what you're going to use the knife for. It depends on what you value more. You know, would you rather Would you rather the edge, you know, hold up longer and have to be resharpened less often, and you don't mind that it's a little harder to resharpen? Or do you really not like resharpening and you want it to be really easy to sharpen? You know, then those two things are polar opposites. The same properties that make an edge hold up longer are the same properties that make it harder to resharpen it, because you're removing material when you're sharpening it, and it. So,
I mean, you're wearing away the material, and if it's a wear resistant material,
if it's wear resistant, right? If it's going to be wear resistant when you're cutting stuff, it's also going to be wear resistant when you're trying to make it sharp. When you're trying to remove material from it to make it sharper. So, everything is a trade off. You know, you get more toughness, then you know. You get it a really high hardness, then it's going to be more likely to chip rather than roll, like, you know, or for the blade to crack or whatever, like that. The higher hardnesses come with that, you know. That's there's a trade off to everything, and so trying to find the right recipe of the steel properties and then the heat treat properties, that, because inside a steel property there's all these variables that can make, you know, like, it's not one set. Okay, this steel has these properties. Boom, it's cut and dried. It's got, that steel has these potential properties, and depending on how you heat treat it, it's got more of this or less of this, and it's always a compromise. So there's not one perfect steel. There's not one perfect heat treat of any one steel. Again, it goes back to picking the right thing for the job that you're wanting it for. You know, so it's, you know, For most of us, for like the typical knives that we're carrying on a daily basis, we probably just want them to have good edge retention. You know, we definitely don't, we want them to be tough enough that they're not going to chip out easy. We don't want them to be so soft that they roll easy. We want them to be, you know, at least moderate on the moderate to easy moderate on the resharpening. Like, that's what most people, just on average, I would say, want out of a steel. The stainless properties, all of that, like, it's the average is probably there. And then you start, again, you getting into specific stuff like bushcrafting, or you start getting into bigger stuff like choppers and stuff like that, and all of those choices start to change, you know.
It's
the best steel for a 3.5-inch blade folder that you're going to use for just normal daily tasks is not necessarily the best steel for a big, you know, 10-inch bladed chopper that you're going to take out and, you know, be chopping down small trees and stuff with. It's just,
Steel and the best heat treatment, you know, as well.
Right. The combination, the formula. Yeah.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
recipe for that.
And it's, so I know I go back to it all the time, and it's probably a tired analogy, but I mean, there's a reason, you know, a Toyota Camry is, you know, far more common to see on the highway versus a race car or a rock crawler. You know, you've got that spectrum of things that, you know.
Yep. And it's more down the middle. It does.
Yeah. And you don't want to take a race car rock crawling, and you don't want to put a rock crawler on a racetrack. You know, there's you know, there's all these things.
You probably don't want to do either one with a Toyota Camry or a Honda Accord. So, not with a stock one anyway. So, again, right tool for the right job, and know that. Yeah, and like you said, people now have gotten very hung up on, you know, specific rockwell hardnesses and stuff. And that's fine, because they're, you know, even the generally, like, say, for MagnaCut, you know, you take what's generally accepted as kind of the best range for the hardness. Well, that steel may not necessarily be the best range for your particular needs, you know. So it just kind of depends on what you like and which things you value more. Because, again, every single thing is a trade-off. You're trading something to gain something else. And ideally, you want to keep it, as, like you said earlier, as balanced as possible. That's the best we can do, is balance everything as much as we can. And it's the same thing with everything else. Back to cars. Like, you want, you know, so for your daily driver, you want something that's comfortable enough. You want it reliable. You want it, you know, probably you want it fuel efficient if you're driving it every day. You know, you want it, you want safety. Most of us probably want at least a little bit of cool factor, or at least something that we actually like the looks of it and stuff like that. But then, you know, again, if you're going to go down to the drag track on the weekends, then you got a whole different set of needs for what you want to take there. Like, or if you're going to go out and hit the trails on the weekends, whole different set of needs. There's trade-offs to everything. You know, I'd love to drive a big, you know, I'd love to drive a freaking monster truck down the road every day, but I don't, you know, have to compromise. It's not legal.
So for your driveway, you'll be fine.
Yeah.
You got a short commute. You'll be fine.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, I could drive mine to drive one to work every day because I don't have to hit any public roads to do it. I could literally drive a monster truck to work every day. That's a good point when it comes time for me to make the argument to buy one.
Yeah.
It can be that I can drive it to work every day. It's my daily driver. Put a few cars, put a few junk cars between here and there to run over every day on the way.
Oh, that'd be fun. Yeah.
Yep.
All right. So, do you have anything else to add to this sort of hard use discussion or, you know, any of that?
No, not really. And again, like, it's all about trying to find the best formula. When I say the formula, everything from the knife you choose to the steel that the knife is made of, the heat treat that the steel is heat treated to, the edge geometry that the knife is ground to, all of those things are factors in what is going to be the best combination of that for you to carry on a daily basis for what you're planning on doing. And for somebody like I know John works a job where he's doing some a little bit heavier duty cutting tasks versus maybe somebody that works in an office that, you know, maybe they're, you know, slicing open somebody's Capri Sun at lunch for them or something like that. You know, I don't know, just, you know, where you're opening up a package with it every day or whatever. Yeah. Somebody that's opening up packages every day is the main thing they do with their knife versus somebody that's, you know, breaking down pallets and cutting straps and doing, you know, all kinds of stuff in a more industrial setting.
Yeah,
those are potentially two completely different needs and completely different choices, you know, much like a, you know, a person in law enforcement or military is going to have much different choices of firearm for somebody that's doing close quarter stuff and somebody that's, you know, going out to take a 1,000-yard shot as a sniper. Like they're going to have different tool choices. So it's, you know, a lot of it's based on that. But if you have the knowledge of all the things that we hopefully had a little bit of enlightenment out of this discussion to understand, you know, how the edge geometry and all that plays into it and how you can kind of, it's not 100%, but you can kind of tell by looking at it. Like I said, the I'd say 9 times out of 10, the height of the sharpening bevel is a dead giveaway of how thin or thick the edge was, you know, before it was sharpened, which is going to make a huge difference in how robust it is and how long it'll, so, you know, again, the compromise, are you looking for it to be super slicey and stay slicey longer and be easier to touch up? Or are you want it more robust and probably going to dull a little quicker and probably going to be a little harder to touch up? Like it's, you just pick the tool that fits the best need. So, but to do that, you need to know the difference in the tools, and maybe we helped with that. Maybe we just confused people, but we'll see.
Yeah. I mean, there's a ton of factors to consider. We could probably be here all day long going over it and second guessing and, you know, all that sort of stuff. But, I think that was a pretty good discussion on that whole thing. And we wanted, John asked this question a few weeks ago and just, I didn't feel like we could just tuck it in at the end of an episode and me getting this.
I feel like,
big beast of a thing definitely made me want to, you know, kind of, I don't know, it made me think about it more.
Yeah. Well, you're seeing you're seeing something else that's a different tool designed for a different task than most of what you're making on a daily basis or whatever. So it's, you know, it looks like a stark contrast between the two. And it's, and again, like we're not saying anything is right or wrong.
No.
It's just a matter of what, you know, again, the right tool for the right job. You know?
Yeah, no, I love that knife. Don't, let's not, this thing's
it's
awesome.
Like we're not knocking rock crawlers or dragsters, you know, definitely not knocking monster trucks, but we're not knocking a Toyota Camry. They all have their place. It's just a matter of which tool fits what you need it for the best.
Indeed.
So,
before we hop off of here, I did want to say one thing that's, you know, sort of out there. There was a lot of talk at Blade Show about a particular figurehead of a major American company, knife company, and a lot of hate, I guess, kind of going around. And
was it me? I'm just kidding.
Not that I heard, but people don't usually tell me things like that.
Yeah.
They kind of know where I stand, but anyway.
Yeah, it was probably out there. They just didn't tell you.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry.
But mainly, I just wanted to kind of put out a PSA and remind the people, you know, I know y'all are fans of knives. We are fans of knives as well, and that it's easy to get sucked into the minutia and have different factions of, oh, I don't like that guy, I like that guy, and, you know, there's some polarizing figures. However, we're all just people at the end of the day, and having real life people struggles. And so, like, just kind of chill out on all the, like, personal hate. It's one thing not hate, like, not liking a knife that, you know, that particular person makes or produces or whatever, or, you know, that particular person's, you know, choice in how they market themselves or whatever else. But just, you know, let's try to be nice, as Jonathan would say.
That's right. And, yeah, you know, I was waiting to get through that.
Let's take the hate out and, you know, kind of focus more on the things we enjoy in this community versus it just being a big old pot of poop stirring.
Yeah. How about let's act like a bunch of cool dudes instead of a bunch of 13-year-old drama queens, because that's way too often is what we devolve into, I feel like. I couldn't tell you guys, and just so, and I hope that, you know, I'm going to say that probably most of the people that are hearing this probably doesn't apply to, because I feel like we probably got really good, cool listeners. Yeah. But I can't tell y'all how many times Amy has told me, like, men are like the biggest drama queens I've ever seen. Cause she monitors all the different Facebook groups and all that and sees, like, in, you know, and here, see, which is where a lot of the drama seems to stem from or to gravitate to or whatever. That seems to be where a lot of that gets aired. Yeah. So yeah, it's like, let's not be like that, guys. Let's keep our industry cool. And look, if you don't like there's a reason that we're doing a podcast that I tell personal stuff, that I put myself out there as much as I do. If you resonate with me, great. If you don't like me, that's fine too. I'm well aware I'm not going to be everybody's cup of tea by a long shot. And if that affects you wanting to buy something from me one way or the other, whether you want to buy something because you like me or you don't want to buy something from me because you don't like me, that's okay too. I'm never going to please everybody, so that's fine. So I just try to be myself. Well, I don't know that everybody else is out there doing that. Some are, some maybe are, you know, maybe not being totally genuine. I don't know. Like, I probably don't know them well enough to know. But either way, and you can dislike somebody and still like their products and still buy their products. You can dislike them enough that you don't want to buy their products and support them. And that's okay, but we don't have to make a big drama fest out of it. Like, a lot of people, period, this is not just our industry, because it's on every post, just about, not every post, but especially any, like, big name people or whatever. People need to remember the thing that we were told over and over and over again growing up, which was, if you don't have something nice to say, don't say anything at all. You do not have to chime in just to tell somebody how much you don't like them, or to tell somebody how much they suck, or to tell somebody that, you know, this isn't for me, or this is what, like, just like, sure, you have the right to do that, but that doesn't mean it's the right thing to do. Like, you know how many things I see that I don't like, that I would literally waste all of my time and not be productive at all and not even have a business and a brand if I spent all of my time just going around, you know, speaking out on all the things that I didn't like. Oh, well, I don't like that. And do you know how pretentious and, like, full of yourself it makes you sound? Like, nobody asked you. Like, somebody, now, the exception being, if I put a post out and I say, what do you guys think about this? Then I am certainly not going to, you know, be throwing any hate your way for not, you know, for saying that you don't like it. I asked for the feedback. But when somebody just posts something, whatever, hey, this is the new thing we're doing, whatever, like, they're not, I mean, sure, they want you to see it, but, like, they're not necessarily asking you, hey, please chime in and tell me everything you think about it, you know, from your point of view. Like, if they're asking for it, great, tell them. But, like, you don't have to comment on everything you see just because you don't like it. That screams to me every time I see that. And I'm not just talking about the knife world. It's everywhere. It's all over the internet. When I see that, that screams to me that person making that comment is just so lacking for attention that they have to find a way to get attention. And they do that by knocking somebody else's stuff. Like, it's just, it's not a good look. Like, doesn't mean you gotta like everybody's stuff, but you don't necessarily have to say it out loud and like just be a shit stirrer for no reason. Like, it's just, there's no reason for it. So
you didn't want to go with poop stirrer?
Yeah, sorry, I'm a little, yeah. I'm not 12.
I'm sorry. I was trying to keep it PG.
I know. I'm always the one pushing the limit, but believe me, I'm like very much filtering myself. So especially when you get into topics like this.
You're the most 12-year-old adult I know. You're talking about monster trucks and ninja swords. And...
in a lot of ways, maybe on the language side of it, not so much on PG.
12-year-old sailor.
Yeah, 12-year-old with that big Dixon energy, I guess. I had to get a plug in there.
There you go.
But anyway, yes, I think we could all stand to just have a big dose of, like you said, of being nice. You know, there's a reason that I made that one of my slogans. There's a reason that I've got it tattooed on me. And believe me, this is not just to tell other people. This is to remind me when I look down, because I need the reminder a lot too. But like, also like, keep in mind, like when you're making a negative comment about somebody's stuff or whatever, like keep in mind the impact that may have on them. You know, again, like now if somebody is saying something that you disagree with their opinion and you feel the need to speak out, that's one thing. Like it's fine. I mean, that's, you know, a discussion is fine. But when you're just randomly just throwing out hateful comments just because you don't like the way a particular knife looks, and I mean, dudes literally get mad because, like, I don't know why this doesn't have such and such feature or such and such feature. Well, dude, like, if it don't have the features you want, move on. Go find a knife that does have the features you want. I mean, nobody's holding a gun to your head telling you that you've got to like that knife, but people will say stuff and make these like offhand comments and not think about the impact that can have, number one, on the psyche of the person whose work that is. Number two, on the financial side of the person. Like, so like, are you literally wanting to like hurt people's business and like make them, not just because you don't like something about a particular knife that they did, or maybe even don't like something about them themselves? Like,
yeah.
Is it really to the point that you actually want to hurt them and, you know, potentially the people that work for them and all that, like by spreading negative stuff? I think the 99.9% of it is uncalled for. You know, I feel like there's probably about a 1% time that people probably do need to get called out on something. They say something stupid, but it's way, way, way out of hand. It's mostly people just needing to keep it to themselves, and if you don't have something nice to say. So,
yeah. And that's my biggest thing. Yeah. Like, you know, the separation of, you know, the thing you're, you know, mad at or disagree with versus the person is one that I think in every aspect of society, like, it's hard, you know, especially on the internet, you get in an argument with someone about something, it immediately devolves into insults rather than the actual argument. And
yep,
that's, you know, rather than the subject itself,
it automatically gets worse, the argument.
Yeah.
Yep.
But
good rule of thumb is the first, whoever, when you start throwing an insult, you've lost the argument at that point. So just keep that in mind when when you get ready to insult somebody. And, you know, yeah, it's ridiculous. Like I see this stuff all over about everything. Obviously political stuff is a big deal. Like, and it's so, people are so quick to just call each other idiots and whatever. Like, dude, like, not everybody has the same perspective as you, the same life experience as you. Like, it's, you know, and when it comes back to our industry, like, not everybody has the same taste as you, just because, or the same perspective on stuff. Just because you think a knife needs to have a deep carry pocket clip doesn't mean that every clip out there that's not deep carry is garbage. Like, yeah, there's tons of people that don't want deep carry pocket clips. Same with any feature you can think about on a knife. Like,
there's someone who wants it the other way.
Right. Like, right. So, and there's certainly nothing to be mad about because the person didn't make it the way you thought they ought to make it. Because what I think on almost a daily basis when reading some of the comments and stuff like that, and some of the emails that we get and all that kind of stuff, is like, then go make one yourself. Like, nobody's stopping you. Like, if you've got all these ideas about how the perfect way it should be, then why are you not doing it? Like, make your own. Like, I cannot tell you, probably a daily basis, I think that about somebody. It's like, and not just talk people talking about our stuff, but just in general, seeing comments stuff. It's like, just like, why are you going to the trouble to comment? Like, if you really dislike it that bad and you're so inclined to know exactly how something should be, then put yourself in the arena. Go do it.
Yeah.
So it's probably a little foreshadowing to what we're probably going to talk about next week too, if Chase is cool with it. So
I don't know what he's talking about, but we'll figure it out afterwards.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I just wanted to put that out there. And do you have any closing thoughts for this week's steel mill?
I think be nice is a good end of the topic, good way to end the topic. And guys, please help us out by continuing to comment. You guys are doing great about commenting on our stuff and you know, follow us. Please try to share the show. We greatly appreciate that. It's tough, as there's a gazillion podcasts out there. So it's, you know, there's even quite a few knife podcasts out there now. So it's really easy to kind of get lost in the shuffle of everything that's out there. So we greatly appreciate if you guys would share, you know, when the show comes out every week or whatever, maybe throw it up in your story or something. We appreciate that very much. We can use all the help we can get. So
for sure.
We appreciate you guys in general, and just please keep that up.
Yep. Don't forget about the shirts. They're on my website. If you want one, come get one. If we don't have the size, let me know. I can figure that out and let you freak flag fly.